All right, here we go. We ready?
I guess.
Welcome to M Vibes Podcast,
home of good music,
good libations,
and good vibes.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the season finale of season 4 M Vibes Podcast. Oh, what do we got here? We're back at Tommy's Pub. Really quick. Not quick, whatever. A legendary hardcore wrestler passed away this past week. By the time this airs, it'll be a long time gone, but I feel like we need to do something for this man. Cheers, rest in peace to Terry Funk. And if you can hear what's playing, you know who my guest is today. This is Anti-Scene Funk You. And special guest today here, Jeff motherfucking Clayton, man. So welcome to the show, man.
Pleased to be here, man. Thank you for having me.
What are you drinking today, Jeff? What is that?
I am drinking Yingling.
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 One of the oldest.
Oldest American brewery.
Yeah. Oldest American brewery in America.
They're out of Pittsburgh and Tampa, right?
No, they were from up around the Philadelphia, New Jersey area.
That's right. Yeah. But they also brew in Tampa, too, I think.
They might. They very well may.
They may. I don't even know who owns them now.
I started drinking these when we used to play up around Philadelphia a lot.
And right.
They hadn't gotten distribution to the rest of the country yet.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I used to bring cases of it back.
Yeah. Yes.
That was back in the 1800s.
Right, 1800s. Yeah, we brought it back.
Until like 4 or 5 years ago, Yingling wasn't available in Michigan either, so I used to bring it up to my brother-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they did not have wide distribution.
Luckily, North Carolina gets a lot of really good beer, so, yeah. And I got Noble's Blackberry Peach Crumble Hard Cider, and, of course, the old faithful Jameson. How about you, Ernie?
I am having the Tommy's Pub Ale from Pilot. So it's their...
Shout out to Javier for that label. Yeah, that awesome label.
He designed this. I don't know if it's focusing, but... the Pub Ale has always been excellent. So
yeah.
And slapping Tommy's name on it is even better.
Yeah. I thought they weren't going to make anymore, but they did. So awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. We weren't sure at first if they were going to make another batch. Yeah. And I guess it went so well to begin with. They like, let's do it again.
Yeah. Awesome. It's good to have some beers for Tommy's Pub with Tommy's Pub name on it. So that's awesome. Anyways, let's talk about Jeff. Let's talk about Anti-Scene, man. Where did it all start? I'm sure it was like, what, 70s? 80s?
Almost. It started in 1983.
Okay. The year Empire Strikes Back came out.
Yep.
Yep. I refer to a lot of things around Star Wars films. Sorry.
Well, I have to refer to times with pop culture, too. It helps me keep it all straight.
Yeah.
Because I can't keep nothing in the 2000s straight at all.
Me either.
It's just like, oh, what? That was 20 years ago?
That was a blur.
It's like the 90s was just 5 years ago. Oh, shit. Yeah. No,
it's like after the Y2K scare.
Yeah.
That whole decade, you're like,
yeah, then it's all a blur from there.
I don't know what happened.
Everything's going to shut down. We're all going to die. And nothing happened. Yeah.
So where did it all start then, or how did it all start?
Yeah.
Okay. I moved to Charlotte in 1982.
Okay.
And was going to Central Piedmont Community College.
CPCC, yeah.
To study advertising design.
Okay.
And I started I don't think I had any bands while I was living here proper. But I had some bands when I was living back in New London, North Carolina. And we came and played the Milestone. I went to the Milestone for the first time ever in 1981 to see Black Flag.
Oh, I knew it. I knew you were going to say that. I'm jealous.
I always had to make this reference to people because they think, oh, well, you know, you could just pull up to the club. This was before cell phones, before GPSs, before... Mm-hmm. MapQuest, you know,
yeah.
we just pulled into Charlotte and went to places. How do you get to Tuckasegee Road? You know, and
off of 85 and turned down that street, and then yeah.
And eventually we got there. Yeah. And we must have passed the building 10 times because back then it was not, it didn't have anything painted on it. It said it was the milestone.
I mean, it's just a house.
And there was a strobe light going on in the upper level.
Yeah.
And people would tell us, just look for the blinking light, you know. We're like, okay. And we pull out, you know, we pull in there, go in, and man, it's like, we're small town guys, man. This is our first time ever going to see a club band.
Yeah.
It was scary. We didn't know what to expect. And, you know, at this point, all we'd seen was arena rock and that kind of stuff. And we saw Black Flag at their ultimate peak.
That was Hemi Rollins, though, right?
Rollins' first tour with them.
Wow.
Robo was still playing. And, man, when they started, it was like a bomb went off, man. Oh, it's like, see, I got good goosebumps just talking about it.
I wish I was there for that.
Just to have been there and see that, it was so inspiring. Not that, I want to play that style of punk rock, but just, you know, that was what really was the blasting cap to make it to where it's like, okay, we got to start a band too.
Yeah.
Prior to that, it was listening to the Ramones and, let's get a band. You know, we had a band. We weren't very serious about it. When we saw Black Flag, we got really serious about it. And so I met Joe Young. He was working.
The Mighty Joe Young.
Mighty Joe. Yeah. He was working at the bar at the Milestone for a show from a New York band called The Stimulators.
I've heard of them.
Harley Flanagan played drums for them when he was 13 years old.
I think I have that on vinyl too. Isn't that, it's got like a split pink and black cover on one of their albums, I think.
I just know the single and they had a Roar cassette.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
But, when they played the Milestone, Harley wasn't with them anymore. I don't know what he was doing at that point, but they were incredible. And I met Joe there and, I saw him again when the half of the Sex Pistols were there, the Professionals. Do you know about that band?
No, I don't.
The Professionals were Paul Cook and Steve Jones with two other guys. And they played Pretty Vacant, Anarchy in the UK.
Are you a Sex Pistols fan?
I love the Sex Pistols.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
The Sex Pistols are one of my favorite bands of all time.
I do too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I met Joe there, and he said, I said, hey man, I'm going to be moving to town soon. You know, like I'm going to start living here, and I don't know why I thought he might be a musician, but I said, hey man, I'm going to start a band. You want to be in my band? You know, he's like, oh yeah, I play guitar. All right, well, I'll be here in August, you know, and so let's get together and start. And he went home and got his brother to give him a crash course on guitar. Hey, man, teach me some power chords, you know. And he had a, I think it was a little Encore guitar, a little black Encore guitar, and a little tiny crate amp that looked like a wooden crate. That's what it was called. The company was Crate.
It makes noise, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I remember those.
And we started, you know, doing some chords. And when we first started, there was another fella from Fayetteville that was going to join. He was on guitar, too. We were going to have two guitars like the Cramps.
Okay.
So we figured that was, you know, we'll have one play low and play one, play the what became the patented hold your eardrums.
That's another group I didn't get to go see, which I should have. I had
you
chances.
Really should have.
I had fucking chances, and I didn't. Which is now, I have what's called the Joe Strummer rule now. So, a week before he died, and it was 2010, we were gonna go. Me and my wife were gonna drive to Atlanta to go see him, and we didn't, and he died. I've never cried for any artist before in my life. I would remember watching MTV News that day. I think Matt Penfield came on and said, "Oh, Joe Strummer died." I said I was in Michigan at my mom's college, and I started balling. So I should have went.
I'm also a big Clash fan.
I love
the
Clash.
And I never got to see the Clash.
Me either.
I'm getting ahead of myself on the ends.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Let me come back to the Clash.
Okay.
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 Remind me if we get sidetracked.
Okay.
But so we were going to have this two guitar band, me singing, and we had a fella named Mitch Cooper on drums. And the guy that was on guitar, man, he was in the Air Force. And one day he just disappeared. And we don't know where the hell he went. He was gone for better part of a year. We never heard from him
Holy
again.
Shit.
Turns out he was over in Lebanon or somewhere, and he couldn't tell nobody.
Hey.
And we're just like, well, yeah, well, of course we pushed on. You know, when we didn't hear from you for a month, we're like, well, I guess we got to find another guitar player.
Phone call. Yeah.
And we got that guy's okay.
And Bill Cates ended up playing bass for us, and we met for the first time ever at my grandmother's woodshed in New London, North Carolina. And we taught those guys, you know, about five or six songs that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And so it went really well that time. So we were, you know, like I'm talking first practice and we are ready. We're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were offered a slot opening for a thing called Punk in the Hills in Boone, North Carolina. And it was also the very first show that Fetchin' Bones ever played.
Wait, in Boone?
Boone, North Carolina.
Wow.
At a place called The Barn. And it was indeed a barn. But it was converted into a house.
Yeah.
And it had a loft and everything. I mean, it really cool place. And October 1st, 1983, we did our first show. And we were headlining the thing.
Wow.
And from there on, it just snowballed, you know. And, of course, guys quit. Guys got shit canned, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was always me and Joe were the constant. And it just seems to me, I guess, now that it seemed like a lot of stuff happened in short periods of time back then. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it just seems like now a year goes like that, and you...
It does.
Damn. And you feel like maybe you didn't accomplish that much.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, man, it was changing so often. And, like, I guess it got to be around 85 is when we recorded our first ever record. It was called the Drastic EP. First song we ever wrote together was called She's Part of the Scene, and it's on that record.
Got it, Ernest? Sorry.
I was doing adjustments. Sorry.
That's right.
You want me to keep talking until he cues it?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
which one was that?
She's Part of the Scene.
She's Part of the Scene.
That was the first song Joe and I ever wrote together. And here it comes.
Thank God for editing post.
Yes. Ernest is very good at editing. This kind of reminds me of Sheena as a funk rocker.
It was probably our take on that.
Yeah. Which the only Ramon I ever saw was Marky. I never got a chance to see anyone else. So, yeah, it sucks. I'll never forget when we used to have Fat City. I walked into one and I'm like, hey, that looks like Marky Ramon on drums. Or like, that is Marky Ramon on drums.
Oh, he was playing with the Intruders.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. But it just seemed like quickly around 85, we turned into this other kind of thing, man. We added a second guitarist. We had a bass player that was way older than us, but very skilled, which kind of set the groundwork for always having the bass player that could go all around, you know, mm-hmm. while we kept it, you know, just real basic.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like I've always described it as a flea market version of Alice Cooper.
Okay.
Like, none of our props looked good. None of our special effects were professional. it was haphazard as hell. It was like taking a wheelbarrow and jumping a ramp with it. And there's our show. Hey, thank you, everybody. You know,
and, man, if you only knew how big of an Alice Cooper fan I am, too. So, yeah.
Oh, man, it sounds like we like a lot of the same stuff.
Hell of a show. Hell of a show.
Yes. Alice Cooper's also from my hometown, so.
Yeah.
Detroit, yeah.
Yep. Well, so I guess we evolved into what, it just seems like from 83 to about 87, we were still trying to figure out what exactly it is anti-scene is supposed to be. And we ended up being a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But the fact that we hadn't developed it yet didn't stop us. We were recording records. We recorded 3 records in that time period. We recorded a full-length album, 2 EPs.
Well, your version of punk rock wasn't really like the big Clash punk rock or the big Germs type of punk rock. It was a different kind of.
It was different because we had so many different kinds of influences that a lot of these guys didn't have. And you know what one of those things was? Being from the South.
Yeah.
You know, Clash didn't have that.
No.
None of them. The Ramones.
There were zero.
No, there was nothing back then, man. And I don't think it was like we sat down and went, well, we're going to just, you know, keep our Southern thing up front.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we ever decided that. It just kind of happened.
Right.
At about 88, when we were 87 or 88, we recorded the Blood of Freaks EP. And that pretty much solidified the way we would be, you know, 30-something years past. So
still fucking doing it.
It's still awesome. Doing it, man. Yeah. And I'm telling you, when we recorded that first record, we figured we'll play a few shows. We'll put out a 7-inch.
Yeah.
You know, we get to play with our favorite bands like Black Flag and Fear and all of them. And then we'll call it a day. We'll be done. You know, we never put a time limit on this or said, oh, man, we just got to keep going. We got to keep going.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think, and it's easier to see in hindsight, my wife told me this, she was mentioning this the other day. It's just like, you know, y'all's main drive was just being stubborn. And when when people said, oh, yeah, you know, that band, they're going to be broke up in 2 years anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, what can they do beyond what they've done? You know, and we're just like, oh, yeah, well, we'll show you.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll last 10 more years.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think I've ever heard the same set list twice at an anti-scene show.
Unless always, you see us in consecutive nights, you probably won't.
It's always something new, so yeah.
I mean, we got like, what, 9,000 songs to pick from?
Yeah, yeah.
So we try to keep it within that, you know, 200 or so.
Last time I saw you was at the, what's that, the Flying Burrito place in Gastonia? I forget what that place was called. It was a restaurant that you guys played at.
Freeman's Pub?
No. It was
you saw somewhere else in Gastonia.
It was a restaurant that served Mexican food
in Gastonia.
Was it Gastonia or Belmont? I mean, it's the same. It's the same place. But
man, whatever. I'm having a hard time remembering that. And I've usually got a pretty damn good memory. But
Russ was with you then too. You guys played some like alien song about outer space there.
Yeah, Masters of the Sky.
Yeah. Javi and I were like, well, we never heard that song. That's awesome. Matter of fact, I came back in and asked you, hey, what fucking song was that, Jeff? You're like, yeah, Master of the Skies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was by a buddy of ours from Dallas, Texas, named Jack Starr. He recorded, he was recording weird, freaky, far out stuff back in the 60s and the 70s. And we met him at Green Street Station in 1989. Do you know who the A-Bones are?
I've heard of them.
From New York?
Yeah.
They were backing Jack Starr up.
Okay.
And, man, I guess it was the Southern thing, you know, Southern Texas Southern thing, but we hit it off with him so well. Meeting him for the first, I never heard of him until we were there that day.
Really?
He sure as hell never heard of us.
No,
but man, he insisted that I come on stage with them, with the A-Bones and him, and play washboard with them on a couple songs. Yeah. And man, to me, I was just like, oh man, this is incredible. You know, yeah. It was like, this guy's, and I stayed in touch with him, throughout the rest of his life, and he wrote, he didn't write Masters of the Sky for us, but he told me, he said, man, I got this song about aliens because I think you guys could really do a good job on it. But then he did write one especially for us called Destroy Them All. We still play that to this day from time to time.
Yeah, that might be.
It's on Eat More Possum.
That might be queued up, which is my favorite.
No, okay. Yeah. Jack Starr speaks on that record.
Really?
He's the one that says, beings of Earth. You know,
yeah.
And he says, and at the end he goes, he's like, even the kid and the little puppy like Antiscene. And he goes, I'm Jack Starr, and baby, you can believe what I say.
That's awesome. Actually, I think my favorite Antiscene song is Stormtrooper.
Yep, that's a crowd favorite.
Yep. There you go. I think the only other Southern punk rock band besides you guys that I knew of before I moved to Charlotte was Avail.
From Virginia.
Yes.
Richmond, right?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I moved down here. I saw you guys actually before I saw Avail. You guys played the main stage at Tremont, which motherfucking John Tremont, if you don't get on this fucking show, I've been trying to get him on. He said he would do it, and then he's kind of vanished.
I'll talk to him.
Okay, yeah.
I'll talk to him for you.
Oh, yeah. Tremont, man, God, yeah. I'm so sad.
John that Hayes.
Place. Yeah. I'm so sad that place is gone, man. That's so many good,
so
good shows.
So are we.
Yeah, we are. So many good shows in that place. Now there's condos there, and I drive past there and kind of cry and get sad.
There's all kinds of
so many good shows
areas
there.
In this town that I just kind of, have to choke it back when you drive by.
All right, just on a side thing, everything that was cool about Charlotte when I first moved here is gone.
What year did you move here?
96.
Yeah, there's still a lot of cool stuff going on here.
Yeah, that's Tremont has just opened. When I moved here, the first show I saw there was Guttermouth, The Descendants, and Less Than Jake. Great show.
Guttermouth.
I think they...
I worked security then.
Did you?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
You and my tattoo artist, I think Trey, worked there too. The guy.
Yeah,
you,
I remember him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got some stories. Every time I'm getting ink, we have stories about Tremont. He said he has a lot of stories about, funny stories about the Insane Clown Boss when he played there. So yeah,
those were the most shows where we were the most busy.
Yes, because there was a lot of props to do and a lot of things to fight through, including big bottles of Faygo. Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of talking about the crowd having to control.
Yeah.
Things going on in the crowd. Yeah.
Anyways, let's get back to Antiscene.
All right. Where did we leave off? 88?
Yes.
Okay. So.
I think so.
So just, we started in 83. Here it comes around. It's 93. Actually, let's go back to 92. We made a little bit of a big deal about being together 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, it's our 5-year anniversary show. Who did a big show at the Milestone?
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, to this day, I cannot figure out why we made a big deal about it being our 9th year. It's our 9-year show. It's going to be a special. We had a nice flyer with Ivan Koloff digging into Terry Funk, and his blood all over the place. And people were like going, next year's your 10-year anniversary. I'm just thinking it was a subconscious thing that we're just like, no way is this going to last 10 years.
Right.
No way. It did. And we made an even bigger deal of our 10-year anniversary. So then we said, well, you know, what are we going to do? Make a big deal out of 11 and 12? And then we just like, let's do it in 5-year increments.
10 and a half?
Yeah, 10 and a half. It was such a success, we want to do it again this year. But yeah, we said, well, let's just do it in 5-year increments. If we make it to 15, then we'll celebrate it. And by then, we kind of figured, we weren't really kind of guessing about it anymore. Like, okay, so when we do the 20th, what are we going to, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. And all the way up till next month when we do 40.
And that's at Ground Zero, right?
Ground Zero in Spartanburg on September 30th.
I haven't been there in a long time.
Well, you should go there September 30th.
I think I will.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Yeah, we're in.
Going to have a lot of the old members coming up and playing with us. Trip will be there. Trip's going to play. And
I bought so many of my Star Wars stuff from Trip. A lot of stuff from Trip.
Trip's the man when it comes to wheeling and dealing.
It does, yeah.
And toys, by the way.
Yeah. Toys and movies and all that stuff, yeah.
Yep.
I love all Trip. He's got, you know, I want to have him on the podcast too because he's got some fucking.
Oh, he would be great to have.
He's told me stories about being on the road. So yeah.
Sometime I have him on my podcast that I do. Yeah. And man, when we talk, like we'll have a plan what we're gonna talk about. We'd never stick to it.
No.
We end up, you know, trailing off into all kinds of stuff and it's always fun. The people always enjoy us.
He has some cool stories with Rob Helford. So he's like, oh, yeah. And that's awesome. Every goddamn time I have a chance to go see Judas Priest, something happens. Mm. I've missed him.
Yep. You didn't go with me last time.
Right. I missed him 3 times. So I forget what happened the first time. Second time, a storm came through and the whole concert got canceled. Was it with you and Deep Purple was going to be with them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Deep Purple opened.
Deep Purple and Judas Priest?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
That was a hell of a show.
That was the night I had to do when I worked at Scarewinds. They had rehearsal night that night. I'm like, all right, guys. It was funny because, you know, it's all kids that work there. I'm like, hey, guys, I got a ticket to go see Judas Priest and Deep Purple tonight. They're like,
who's
who?
That?
Who? I was like, never mind. I'm just, when this is
Judas
over.
Priest, what is that? A gospel group or something?
Yeah. I was like, all right, when this is over, I'm leaving. But when it was over, the concert was over already. So I guess Priest opened that night because I guess they switched nights, so it would be Deep.
Was it one of them things where they were switching every night? Yeah.
I thought Deep Purple would open, and they didn't. It was Priest that night, and I was like, screw it. And whatever.
I've seen Judas Priest a bunch of times.
Yeah.
First time, I guess, was Defenders of the Faith.
Okay.
I should have gone to see him on Screaming for Vengeance. That's a great man. I had this attitude back then. If it ain't punk, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, if it ain't punk rock, I ain't going. And my friends that would come and stay at my apartment, which was very close to the old Charlotte Coliseum, they'd come stay there after they went to shows. Yeah. And they're like, man, you need to come with us to see Priest. I said, no, I ain't going to see that. What if we buy your ticket? You know, when they sprung the 750, you know.
Damn, what was that now?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'll go. And man, I had a blast, you know.
Man.
And then they paid for me to go see Maiden on Number of the Beast and Dio on Sacred Heart. And then before long, man, I was concert guy just like they were.
I loved, we're getting off.
Yeah, we're
very. It's all right though, but when punk rock and metal came together and formed something called thrash metal, it was beautiful, man. Fucking beautiful. So yeah,
that's when our audience kind of split because the older heads that were coming to see us did not appreciate the marriage of punk and metal.
Yeah,
and the shows got a lot more violent.
Okay. Yeah.
And this was also during a time when we were probably drawing our biggest audiences locally anyway, you know, and like we'd play the Milestone, there'd be 300 people, you know, and
that's a lot of people for the Milestone.
I mean, there'd be people all outside, everything, you know, they just after a while, they just tell people we can't let anybody else in, you know, and I remember at one of our, I guess it was our 10-year anniversary show. This is back when Penny Craver was running.
Love Penny.
That's someone you need to have on your show.
I know.
But, well,
but speaking of Tremont, she would actually call me when I worked in the music store and say, hey, should I have this band on? Should I book this band? Fuck yeah, she booked the band. The band was the Insane Clown Posse, so yes.
Well, man, you know, just to go back, I'll go back to Penny in a minute, but you know who the first band was supposed to be at Tremont?
No.
Bobby Womack, the soul singer.
Wow.
Penny goes, Jeff, I might be able to get Bobby Womack. I'm like, really? It's just like,
that'd have been awesome.
She's
like,
I'm thinking about having it to where we have tables, you know, and people sit at tables. And I was like, Bobby Womack is going to play here in this building where I just painted a gigantic rat holding a liquor bottle. Bobby Womack's going to be here. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I think so. But it didn't turn out. It didn't pan out. The first show ended up being Southern Cultural and the Skids were the first band to ever play Tremont.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Yes.
But back to Penny. What was I even saying about Penny? Oh, yeah. She was running the Milestone when we did our 10-year anniversary show. Okay. And she always hired a bunch of the guys that were like ex-military to do the security because it was really rough. Right, real rough. And I remember the co-owners, Maggie and, the name is just like leaving me right now. I'm so terrible with names, man. But Maggie was one of the co-owners of the Milestone.
Yeah.
And she says, she walked through the crowd and she said, she was like holding, you know, pushing people at their backs. And she goes, well, Anti-Scene has the biggest number of people packing of any crowd we've ever had here.
Yeah, there's no metal detector going into the
None of that back then, man. No.
It's actually funny. The last show I went to, me and Ernest went to go see The Offspring a few weeks back, which I'm not a huge fan of, but, you know, like I was saying earlier, I try and hit up shows of bands I've never seen. And I went through the damn metal detector with my vest on. Normally I get the scan. They're like, nah, just go on. I'm like, really?
They didn't say shit.
No, I was like, really? I was like, wow. I don't know. But
I went to a show the next week and I ended up getting wanded.
Yeah. I was expecting that to happen.
This is different.
Yeah. He was like, no, man, just go through. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. Well, I got to packed the gun and walked up in there tonight.
I was shocked at that.
Yeah. Which, by the way, The Offspring was, if you want to go see a band that's
very energetic
and a band that's sold out, totally sell out, it's fun.
Yeah. It was a fun show.
Yeah, it was.
I've seen them before too, also doing security.
Really?
For them. Yeah, I mean, I saw a ton of bands.
I'm sure, yeah.
Just working security
and
you know, traveling, playing ourselves, we end up seeing a lot of them. But, I don't know where I was going with that.
Squirrel, that happens to us all the time. So, we left off 1993, I think.
Yeah, 93, 10 year mark.
Yeah.
And then we did, 15. Was in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
20 and 25 was back here at Tremont.
Yeah.
25th is when we had the Hookers and the Meat Men.
Nice.
With us.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That would have been good.
Yeah.
And Tesco V is a good friend of mine. And
who's the coolest band you guys have ever opened for? Or
the coolest band we ever opened for?
Yeah. Or vice versa. Who's the coolest band that's ever opened for? For you guys,
man, I gotta think about this for a minute. There's several bands that I was just like, when I knew we were on the bill together, I was like, Oh, man, this is going to be so good.
I know you guys just did a show in Atlanta with Fear.
And Fear was one of those bands. Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, in 1996, when Tripp was in the band, we toured the East Coast with Fear. It was so great. And I was going to tell you something about that. Okay. You know, at sound checks and all that stuff, you get to where you talk to the other bands and stuff. And leaving was also a little bit impressed with us playing this kind of music and being Southern.
Yeah.
And he is a huge country music fan.
Is he really?
And we talked about Charlotte, and the first thing that came up was Randy Travis. Because he's from the area, you know, and
Marshville.
All right. Yep. Yeah. Marshville. And so we're talking about it, you know, so it's Fear sound checks first. And when Lee was doing his vocal check, he just starts singing On the Other Hand by Randy Travis. And man, it was amazing. This was before cell phones. I didn't think. We were just sitting there watching, like, man, this is incredible.
We're watching Lee Ving
sing a Randy Travis song, and he sung the whole song.
Wow.
And we were just like, this is so good, you know?
You would have never thought that, though, no.
And so we were in Boston at a club called Mama Ken's that was
Aerosmith-based, right?
Yeah. By Aerosmith, yeah. You can tell clubs
that
are opened by people that play versus...
Well, it's also called... Mama Ken, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because of the song. Yeah. Right. And so every night we had been playing the old 50 or 60s, I think it was a 60s song by an artist named Jumpin' Gene Simmons, not to be confused with the guy from Kiss.
Yeah.
It was called Haunted House.
Ooh.
And we played that in the middle of our shows. And Lee came up to me at one point and says, hey, I'd like to come on with you guys and do Haunted House. And we'll do Haunted House 10 times in a row, if you want, you know. and so he comes on with us in Boston, and he does it. And, man, it is incredible. Of course, we have one photo of it, of him singing in the microphone to my right and me holding the mic and just looking at him like, I can't believe.
He's fucking standing right here doing it with us, yeah.
And so we figured that was that. Okay, it was in Boston, big crowd, everyone got to see it. All right, we're good. Next night, we're playing in his hometown of Philadelphia, and we're at the Theater of Living Arts, big crowd here too. And we're tearing through our set, you know. I start Haunted House, so there was no count off and the band taking off. You know, they had to wait for me. And I'm getting a drink of water, and I see Lee come walking out. I was like, man, we didn't even ask him. And this is his hometown. We didn't ask him because we're like, this is his hometown show. Yeah. Of course he wants to come out with his band, you know. But nah, he came out and he did it with us again, man.
Fuck yeah.
And there is no record of that, no recording, no photos, nothing. And
damn.
And I was just like, man, I cannot believe it. We had Lee Ving do Haunted House with us two nights in a row, you know?
That's awesome.
So that's one of the things. And, man, we've had bands open for us before that people would never, like, I tell people sometimes, and they're just like, no, you didn't, you know? Blink 182 opened for us one time.
Are you kidding me?
With Fear in New York. It's just Blink 182, us, and then Fear.
No shit.
at Irving Plaza.
Wow.
Helmet opened for us
before. Wow.
Clutch opened for us before.
Jesus. Wow. I love Clutch.
Yeah, and you know, it's like these bands, you know, and we didn't, there was nothing to indicate to us that they were going to be huge one day, you know? Yeah, we thought we were going to be.
You are huge.
Well, yeah. We're the biggest band that no one's ever heard of.
What is funny is that I will ask a lot of people, I tell them where I'm from. They're like, oh, you know, what are the big bands from your area? And I'll ask them, I'll say, all right, are you a bigger fan of COC or Anti-Scene? And it's always mixed.
Yeah.
It's always mixed. And they're
all, it's one or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people are like, I didn't know COC was from North Carolina. I'm like, yeah, from fucking Raleigh, man. So, yeah. Which I've met Pepper a few times. He's a cool ass dude.
Yeah.
But he's weird too, man. So he just,
you know what though, man?
He doesn't like to talk.
I saw COC in the very, I saw him with every singer they ever had, mm-hmm. I think. Like early on, you know, when, and I've known those guys forever. And we've shared the stage only a handful of times.
Really?
Yeah. But we were playing with the Obsessed and I Hate God down in New Orleans. And Pepper came out and he was having a hell of a good time.
Really?
And when we got done, he just came up to me and he just hugged me and he was just smiling at me. He just goes, "You guys are like a redneck Ramones." And in my head, I'm going, "Well, damn, Pepper, where you been
for
like 350 years, you know?" Yeah. But okay, I'll take that. but yeah, you know, they're cool guys.
That's a good one. I never thought of that. But
redneck, Ramones.
Redneck Ramones.
I like it. Yeah.
And like people ask, "Who are your influences?" And I say the Ramones. And they go, "Wait, y'all don't sound like the Ramones." I was like, "Well, no, we're not.
You're your own version of the Ramones.
It's not poppy. And we have way more, bluesy influence than the Ramones ever did. But the whole presentation is lifted right off of them. Like there was a time when we all wore the leather jackets until I traded that for flannel, you know, and, but you know, the whole setup, the one guitar, one bass, you know, like everything. If you sat there and really watched it, you go, okay, I can see the Ramones connection.
Yeah.
You know, so it's there.
I see it. Yeah. Definitely. So, I know you guys put out a new album.
Yes, sir. It's called Great Disasters.
Can we play something off that, Ernest? Yeah. If you can see what that is, it's pretty funny.
But the albums aren't listed here, so.
Oh, sorry. It's the, what's the track off the.
Wreck Everything.
That's it, yeah. Anyways, I haven't heard it yet, but I've seen you advertising it, the new vinyl. It's yellow splatter, right? Or yeah.
One version of it. There's three different versions.
Okay. Ooh, I like it.
What a surprise! It's more of the same.
Yeah. At least no one can say anti-scene chasers sound and they suck now. I mean, it's all the same. I mean,
Well, you know, like one thing we don't get the credit for is that we do experiment in other musical styles from time to time, but it all still sounds like us, you know?
I always thought if I were to front a band, I'd sound just like you. At least that's what my wife said. She goes, if you were to front a band, you'd be like Jeff Clayton and like Buju Banton in the same damn person.
Well, that's good company.
Yeah. What's next for Anti-Scene? You guys are going to tour for this album, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
You guys are going to tour for this album, right?
We have not toured for this album yet. We're doing the anniversary show. In September, and then we will tour. We will start doing touring to promote the album in 2024. I know that's bass ackwards, but the world is bass ackwards these days, so it doesn't matter. But
say that again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
plus our members are scattered all over the Eastern Seaboard now. Yeah. Our guitar player is from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, named Walt Wheat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and our bass player is from Newtown, Connecticut, named Malcolm Tent, and Sir Barry Hannibal lives in Concord, and I'm here in Charlotte. And
wow.
But you know what? Having the band so spread out has been a real benefit in a way that when we do get together, we take care of a lot of things in the limited amount of time that we have.
Yeah.
And we've got two more records in the can now.
Really?
Not full length albums. One's a single. We're doing a song about George South.
Oh, cool.
Called Bootleg Preacher, The Ballad of George South.
I want to hear that. Yeah.
He's going to be on it with us.
Awesome.
And so we started working on that. We're doing a 12-inch EP called The Anti-Scene Time Machine. And we will also be working on it's a re-recorded compilation. I know that sounds very complicated, but what we're doing is over the years, we've done probably a dozen songs about wrestling.
Yeah.
And people want them all together. We had a CD of it one time called False Count Anywhere, and it was all the wrestling songs. Yeah. But see, all of them have such different recording qualities that we were just like, you know what?
It all sounds
With this lineup now.
Yeah.
Are
you going to re-record?
We're going to re-record every wrestling song, and they're all going to be consistent.
Fuck You, Cactus Jack.
Dear Abby, about Abdul the Butcher.
Yeah.
False Count. Or no, not same at a record. from Parts Unknown, about mask wrestlers.
Yeah.
Exploding Barbed Wire Death Match.
Don't you have one about Hogan, too?
Mm-mm.
No, you don't have one? Okay. Mm-mm. Sorry.
And
no, that was somebody else.
And The Mysterious Green Mist, about Muda, Kabuki, and Tajiri.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Japanese wrestlers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Funk You, that you played at the beginning of the show.
Didn't the Missing Link also spit mist?
George Steele used to have the green tongue.
Yeah.
I don't know if Missing Link spit the mist or not, man. You may be right about that.
I think he did.
Okay.
I don't know.
But it's...
I could be, he was a very short-lived wrestler, but yeah.
It's kind of linked mainly to Muda and Kabuki.
The great Muda is one of the greatest of all time. I'm glad they put him in the Hall of Fame, too, so yeah.
Wait till you see the back cover picture that's going to be on that George South single. We're putting, we'll see both those songs, George's song, and we did a re-recording of The Mysterious Green Mist. They're both, first of all, it's to introduce the George South song.
Yeah.
And George's parts are going to be different. The single version is going to be different from the one that comes out on the album.
Okay.
That we have George do. But the B-side is Mysterious Green Mist, and we've got a photo, and it is one of the most perfect pictures you could ever see of Muda spitting the mist into George's face.
Oh.
And the picture is so incredible because George's mouth is wide open.
I can't wait to see that.
He explained to us what happened. He says, Muda missed his cue. And, you know, he walks around with that stuff in his mouth the whole time. And he missed his cue. And George went, like tapped him, like, hey, get me. And when he did, Muda goes, oh, yeah. And George's face, the inside of his mouth is green. And his eyes are just like going like this. He said, Jeff, I walked around for 4 days green. He said, I went to Walmart with a green face.
It's like after going to a Guar show, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the single. And then we're doing Anti-Scene Time. What, I said that.
Yeah.
And so there's three records coming out in 24 as we start touring and playing a set that's heavy with stuff from Great Disasters.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. From the engineering side, where do y'all usually record?
Oh.
We set up in a big warehouse and record the guitar, bass, and drum track, the basic tracks. We record all that live.
Oh.
And, okay. and we... Like Barry tracks it himself. We have a guy that we're working with named Jimmy Tutterow, who runs a studio out of Granite Falls.
Okay.
Yeah. And
up towards Hickory?
Right. Yeah. No. Up toward Salisbury.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
and
right.
And they work together, like they come track it where we are. We just prefer the playing it as live as possible. Mm-hmm. I go back and do my vocals over,
right
after they're done. But then they take it back to the studio, they mix everything when, we've already done the overdubs and all that. And,
right.
And so that's pretty much how it's been done now for, I guess since 2020.
Yeah. Cool.
I wanted to go back and talk about something we started to touch on. Mm. The Clash.
Mm, yes. Yes. Man.
They're my favorite band of all time.
Listen, man. I don't know if I can talk about The Clash without getting emotional. And I'll tell you, that is a band that I simply loved. I loved them. I loved everything they did.
Yep.
Except for Cut the Crap.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that. But the thing I loved about them was the songwriting and the singing of Joe Strummer and Mick Jones.
Yes.
And I never got to see them. And, I had a chance to see them, but guess who I went to see instead?
The Sex Pistols.
Uh-uh. I never saw them.
Oh.
I've seen 3/4 of them.
Oh, yeah.
I saw Cook and Jones, yeah, and then I saw Rotten with P.I.L. But The Clash was playing in Columbia, South Carolina in 1984, I guess. And Black Flag was touring for My War. And I went to see Black Flag.
My War is my favorite Black Flag album.
So. I mean, look, man, I saw a legendary show that night. It was good. But, man, when I go back in time, I think about, I could have seen The Clash. And that's when, I guess they were touring for Combat Rock at this point.
That was in her prime then, yeah.
Man, that's like...
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this, though. I did get to see Big Audio Dynamite.
See? Fucked up there, too. I should have went there, but I didn't.
But you know where I had to go? I had to go to New York City to see him.
See, I would have had to go to Chicago. At Riot Fest, yeah.
This would have been when they put out Number 10 Upping Street.
Yeah.
And they were doing a residency at Irving Plaza in New York City.
Oh, wow.
And I just flew up there on a whim that I'd be able to get in. But they said, man, sold out. They had to add 4 more shows at the end of the week. But I'm like, that don't help me, man. I flew. Yeah. So me and my friends were walking around. It's like, bum, man, we're not going to get Big Audio Dynamite, man. It's like... We walked by Irving Plaza just in hopes that somebody was scalping tickets. My friend went up to the ticket booth and he says, man, they still got tickets. And we bought the tickets, man. We went in. And I'm going to tell you what, man, that was a virtual who's who of music just hanging out in the place.
I'm sure, yeah.
I mean, a buddy of mine that lived up there that we were staying with, he went to see him 2 nights prior. Mm-hmm. He says, man, you ain't gonna believe who all was there. He said, Mick Jagger was there.
Wow.
He said, Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics.
Wow.
And so the night we're there, it's a Saturday night, man. Listen to who all showed up to this. I mean, it's like we're sitting there in the crowd, and we're just like, that's, it was like Jimmy Cliff, reggae artist.
No shit.
He was there. Steel Pulse, the whole band.
Wow.
Was right there. And then we're down on the floor, and we look up at the thing and you notice they put one of those velvet ropes up there.
Yeah.
David Bowie and his entourage is up there.
Fucking shit.
Wow. Right? And so I'm just like, man, this is incredible. And like they played, when they closed the show, they played 1999 by Prince.
Oh,
it was amazing, dude. Man. And then,
I'm jealous as hell. I'm so fucking jealous.
Years and years later, That's years and years awesome later, night. I saw Mick Jones with Tony James from Generation X.
Wow.
They had a band together called Carbon Silicone.
Mm-hmm.
And it had Leon Ezekiel Williams from Big Audio Dynamite was in that band, too. And so I don't know if you ever knew this about The Clash, but, you know, they were real pro meeting their audience.
Yes.
After the shows. Yes. You know, they always made room for that. You know, as long as people weren't being assholes, crazy about it. Right. Yeah. You know, and it's like, and Mick Jones was the same. And I had gone earlier to see him at an in-store there in Atlanta.
Don't tell me you met Mick Jones.
I met Mick Jones.
Oh, fuck.
And, man, I was talking to him. Like, I was there with my girlfriend at the time. And and she says, you know, Jeff, you might be bugging him.
I don't care.
I was like, hey, Mick, can you sign this one? Yeah. Hey, can we get a picture? You know? Yeah. And I was just, man, I was giddy. I could not believe
it. Yeah, I'd probably be the same way.
He was so accommodating. Even if I was being obnoxious to him, it wasn't that I was one of these drunk, obnoxious fans that you want to knock out. He's probably just like, I got to get away from this guy before he takes 900 more pictures, you know, but or has me sign 600 more things, you know? And I was just like, I got him to sign my Clash singles box set. I got him to sign a copy of Number 10 Upping Street. I didn't bring everything I had. Yeah. It's like he had probably been like, we got to cut this off, you know. But
yeah, all right, dude. Yeah.
But man, I got to see it. And I told him, I said, man, I saw you guys at Irving Plaza when you did the residency. And he said, I said, I was there the night Bowie came. He rattled off the date.
Wow.
Oh, that was 1984. He remembered the date.
Wow.
But man, that's like when I left there, I was just, you know, it's like I just met one of the guys in my favorite bands of all time. I met the Ramones. And I got along great with Joey. I got along great with Johnny. Marky, I got to even sing with Marky's band one time and do really? Blitz Creek Bach with Marky Ramone playing behind
That's
me.
That's awesome.
You know, and I'm going to tell you, I don't mean to say this stuff like I'm name dropping and... I'm telling you, I'm a fan and it's, mm-hmm. it still resonates with me. I don't take it for granted at all. I consider it to have been a great blessing to be able to get as close to some of these people as I've been able to get, you know? And, I never take it for granted. And, you know, and with the older we get and the more we lose people every day, you know,
I know it's crazy. There are a lot of people gone. Mick Jones is still alive. So there's a chance.
Still alive. Yeah.
There's a chance I could possibly meet Mick Jones at some point in my life.
Yep.
Yeah.
He, like I said, he was very accommodating. Yeah. He's like very appreciative of his life. And you know, man, those guys taught me how to be.
Yeah.
How to be. Because I have met plenty of guys that acted like their audience owed them something. Mm-hmm. I met plenty of guys that acted like, man, I ain't got the time for you, man. But I'm just like, man.
I have too. A bunch of asshole people.
But if it wasn't for me, you have no reason to even be here. Maybe not me personally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But me and all these guys behind me, guys and gals behind me, you know, I'm not saying that it's a weird thing because you do owe something to your audience. Now, when it starts to get personal and they want to crowd into your family life or your personal space, that's different.
If they come knocking on your door, yeah.
But if you're at a show and somebody wants you to sign their shit,
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna sign their shit.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna tell you, this is a very unpopular opinion about all this, but like at the 40-year anniversary show, we'll be doing a meet and greet from 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling people, bring everything you have. Bring it. Because we're not gonna charge you extra. We're just gonna sit there for 2 hours and sign the shit that you bought. That makes you want to be there.
Yeah.
And we're going to sign every single piece of it.
That's awesome.
I've told every member of this band, I said, I don't give a shit. If we're in a hurry, we got to go. I said, if these people bring their stuff to get signed, we're signing every piece of it. And if they want a picture, they get a picture.
Yeah.
You know, we do it all. It's like, it's not up for discussion.
I'm bringing a bottle of Yingling.
and the thing is, man, even when I have been probably in a foul mood for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
I never, ever have tried to let myself take it out on somebody who's just coming to see me for the first time and they're excited, you know?
Yeah.
Try to put all that aside. Try to remember what it was like.
You don't want to ruin their experience with you. Right. And then they walk away saying, Jeff Clayton's an asshole. I've met many artists that were assholes. And I mean, I
have too.
Yeah, but there's a lot of guys I've met that were cool as fuck, man. So, yeah.
And, man, the thing is that both, either end of that spectrum, mm-hmm. stays with you forever.
It does, yeah. So I've told this story before on the podcast. Public Enemy played Amos's. I met Chuck that night. He was cool as fuck. Flavor Flav, straight up fucking asshole. Just a dickhead, man. I was like, yeah, that fucking blows, man. Chuck signed anything anyone brought up to him. There was a dude that walked up with the stack of records this damn tall. And Chuck's stayed there and signed everything. Flav refused to sign anything, let alone talk to anybody that showed up. I walked up to him. I was like, yo, what's up, Flav? He's like, man, fuck you.
Fuck you.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. Damn.
I said, nah, man, it's fuck you. And like, all right, the money cool. I just spent coming you. To see you.
Well, it was funny because right when he was on stage, he's like, we all need to be nice and great to each other and unity and all this other bullshit. He got off stage and that old shit went out the door, dude, so.
Yeah, the guy who gives less to that group than anybody else.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Well, I have people all the time write me, email me, even tell me in person. They said, man, Anti-Scene is one of the best bands to their fans mm-hmm. of any group we've ever seen. You know, and I was like,
yeah, that's awesome.
And that's something I'm real proud of.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to sit there and tell you. I'm not going to say, oh, there is nobody out there would tell you Jeff Clayton's a fucking asshole. There's some. I'm not saying that sometimes they didn't deserve it. because sometimes when they're asking for it, I will deliver.
Yeah.
But I would say 99%. Of our audience that really appreciate us are really, really good people.
Yeah.
And there's no way we'd be doing this for 40 years.
40 fucking years.
If 40 years, if we were the assholes that most people think we are. That would have been nipped in the bud real quick, I think, at some point.
Yeah. You guys just keep putting out quality albums and putting out some kick-ass shows. I think I've seen you guys here. Seen you guys at Freeman's, Tremont. I've seen you all over the place. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being on the show, Jeff.
No, thank you for having me. I've had a good time.
Season 4, season finale. We're going to take a break for, I don't know, a little while, and then we'll start season 5 at some point.
5 years.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's actually 4 seasons wrapped into like 2 years. Yeah. We don't stop.
Maybe we'll take a month break.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Jeff. Cheers.
Thank you.
Adios, guys.
Have a good night. Huge shout out to our gracious host, Tommy's Pub. Located at 3124 East Wade Drive, Tommy's Pub is a small neighborhood bar that's big on music and community. Go to Tommy's Pub's Facebook page where they regularly provide updates about upcoming events to include weekly open mic night, karaoke, and live music from some of the best up-and-coming bands in the Queen City. Thank you, Tommy's Pub, for hosting M-Vibes Podcast. We have a lot of interesting episodes coming up about music's most interesting topics. but we want to hear from you and what episodes you'd like to hear. If you have an idea for anything we should talk about, email us at mbuyspodcast@gmail.com. This episode was produced by BWM Productions. If you like our podcast, please help us by rating and reviewing us on your favorite listening platform. And follow us on Instagram and Facebook at mbuyspodcast. Come on and join in the conversation. Hey, God, stop.